cheaper, faster, and smaller.
But you're saying it's going to require even
continually.
More? But you're going to say it's going to require even more?
No, they're going to be cheaper, faster, smaller, and more efficient.
So the energy needs aren't going to be as high.
At some point, they have to decrease. And so there's going to be an oversupply of energy, and the oversupply of energy should bring the price of energy down to next to nothing, and it's going to destroy a bunch of utility companies. There's my prediction for the future.
Well, let's talk about this. NVIDIA is opening, investing in OpenAI on the 22nd, yesterday. It announced a strategic partnership with OpenAI, which includes an investment of up to $100 billion. By the way, there's no such thing as like $100,000 in anymore. You know, this is $100 million in anymore. No. Or $800 million. No, $100 billion. I mean, seriously, $100 billion. Just for a moment, can we just talk about that? That's a lot. This is seriously, am I kidding about this? Just, duh. That's a lot of money. Can you imagine what things that you could buy? The amount of what you could build for $100 billion? I mean, that's just unbelievable.
Yeah, I know.
How many houses
big
can
numbers.
I build for $100 billion? So, depending on what you could buy, you could do, let's see. So, if you could do... Yeah, mid-range houses are about, let's say, $200,000 to $400,000. So you could do like something like 350,000, 400,000 homes for that price for $100 billion. Low-cost housing, yeah, which we are in desperate need of, you could buy a million homes. That's like 3 million people housed. So they announced this partnership. They're going to deploy. Now, the way they're doing these announcements all of a sudden, by the way, are in terms of power consumption. They said the agreement will help deploy at least 10 gigawatts of NVIDIA systems, which includes millions of its GPUs. The first phase is scheduled to launch in the second half of 2026 using NVIDIA's Vera Rubin platform. So the point here is they're going to have these vast warehousey kind of things, right? These facilities, stock full of computers. You can't just have chips. You know, you need a computer, right? I mean, you need to plug the chip into something. So you're going to have that too. And you're going to have this massive server farm. I guess that's what we'll call it, right?
I might as well call it that for want of a better term.
Yep. With millions of GPUs sucking up 10 gigawatts, and then when they talk about gigawatts, they talk about in an annual sense. So, you know, that's a major... What do you think of this?
I think this is a bubble. And what are they going to do with all this power?
It's AI. It's going to create AI.
AI to do what?
Well, they're hoping to get to the inference. They're hoping to get to, you know, the next level, because AI right now is just regurgitation, right? It's a little bit of grammatical help. It's coding. It's regurgitation of stuff they have in the LLMs. Now, the thing is that's not really AI. That's powerful compute. They want to get to the inference level where it could actually think.
Yeah, good reason. Luck with that. You need some algorithms to do that. You don't need chips.
You know how many homes can be...
Here we go again.
Do you know how many homes can be powered by 10 gigawatts?
I think in cities.
8 million homes.
Cities, big cities.
Right. 8 million homes. How many homes are there in California?
Well, it's more than 8 million. I think we have 30 million or something like that, maybe.
I mean, this is a lot. This is the
But the Bay Area is about eight. The entire Bay Area is about, I mean, it's about 1 million in San Francisco, and there's another 5, 6, or 7 around the Bay Area, I'd say. I'm guessing 8-ish.
Yeah, this is unbelievable. This is shocking. The amount. Now, Intel, NVIDIA, again, NVIDIA coming out with $100 billion. That was just on, that was yesterday. Last week, Intel's getting even more money. This was unbelievable. NVIDIA is going to port $5 billion. Again, it's like, you know, hey, stock's up 3 points today. It's $5 billion. Hey, Intel, ring-a-dingy, Listen, I got $5 billion for you. Do me a favor. Give me it 3 points under market. And what we're going to do is we're going to do a partnership together that develops multi-generations of custom data center and PC products. We want you to manufacture this x86 CPU chips, right, for the NVIDIA's AI infrastructure, which I guess they'll use for this, and build system on chips, COCs for PCs that integrate the chipsets. And, oh, wow. NVIDIA pours this in. Stock doesn't do anything. Intel stock goes up like 18%. This is after Intel got the bailout for, what was it, $10 billion a few weeks ago, with a below-market deal to the U.S. government. The U.S. government's in for, like, I think, $20 a share or less?
Yeah, something like that.
Now, how do we get in these deals with below market? When I say we, not you and I.
I don't think you can do it legally.
I don't think you and I. I'm talking about the markets in general. How do they get this? They get this deal. And why is it not dilutive? Where did the shares come from? It had to come from Treasury.
It has to be diluted. Well, how else can they get in the there's the Treasury shares that they can
they dilute.
Do buybacks on and then dump it back out
so
there?
Not only does this they get it below market value, but the rest of us schlucks are going to have diluted shares, which means that their earnings that come out are going to be diluted over a much larger base. Because they didn't pluck this stuff up from the open market. Because if they did, it would have been at the market price. This was below market. That shares had to come from somewhere else. And that's from Treasury. When I say Treasury, just to be everybody's clear about that, I don't mean U.S. Treasury. It's called Treasury shares that the company owns. When the company has shares, they don't release all of their shares. They usually hold back for different things like stock grants and options and things like that, buying other companies. You've heard of companies say, you know, we're going to buy that company. It's going to be 50% cash and 50% shares. Where do they get that from? Well, they get it from Treasury. And then that's also they get more shares by doing buybacks, which are when you have buybacks, they're the reverse of dilutive. And we've complained about this for years where the more shares they buy back, the better your earnings are. Therefore, let's just reverse our discussion. The less shares you buy back, the less it is for earnings. But more importantly, the more shares you issue, the more you have to divide over for the earnings that you make. Therefore, there's a concern. Meanwhile, nobody seems to care because they have NVIDIA behind them now and the government behind them now.
Nobody seems to care. That's a good... Yep.
Nobody cares. Saunter.
Yeah, saunter. Yeah, shaunter. I don't know what that is.
I don't know what that is either. Let's saunter into TikTok, shall we? The national thing, this thing, again, what you got to love about this administration is they have these things that bug them. You know what I mean? There's like these pet peeves they have.
Yeah. It reminds me of you a lot.
Of course. But it's what it is. They focus in on, they can't get, it's like a dog with something they're not giving up. It's like clamping down. Well, TikTok.
Yeah, President, tennis ball.
Right. Donald Trump, in an interview that aired this Sunday, said that Rupert Murdoch and his son Lachlan are likely to be involved in the proposal to save TikTok in the United States. Just, this is like a thing. Got to save TikTok, right? This is because without us, TikTok is going.
Like, first you threaten to shut it down, and then you're going to save it.
Yeah.
Trump also, what are you saving it from? We're saving it from us.
The whole idea is that there's a belief that the algorithm, let's just say this, aren't there many other Chinese-based apps and things like that that we're all part of on a regular basis?
Well, I'm sure there are. It's just that they don't have the imprimatur, the mojo of TikTok. TikTok caught on. It has a very simplistic algorithm, we think, and it's been demonstrated to me a couple of times how some of it works, and it's caught on. I think it's just a fluke in some ways. Yep. Some things catch on. I mean, if you remember when Twitter first came out, there was a bunch of competitors with different names. Pounce was like one of them.
And, oh, I remember that.
And everybody tried to do, oh, we can do that, the same thing, and nobody, it didn't have the mode. There was an element that was missing or was just not as cool, or people were already on board with one thing. That's why Blue Sky hasn't really gone anywhere. It's just you're entrenched, and next thing you know, you're running the place. It's just the nature of the business that doesn't really like to hold a bunch of companies that are all doing the same thing in high regard. It just takes the one, let's use this one, and we're all on board.
Well, it's interesting. Also, FOT, Friends of Trump, Larry Ellison, and Dell Technology CEO Michael Dell are also likely to be involved in this deal. So you got Rupert Murdoch and his son. Today. Carolyn Leavitt, who is the White House press secretary, said that the TikTok's algorithm will be secured, retrained, and operated in the U.S. outside of ByteDance control. It's almost like they're going to go and deprogram some kind of spy or something.
Well, what they're supposedly going to do, and there's some debate on whether they're going to get the algorithm, which most people think can be reverse engineered without any trouble. I think that Instagram thing, real whatever that thing's called, where they have just those TikTok-like postings.
You have the death scroll.
Yeah, that is pretty similar. It seems it worked the same way. But the idea is they're going to go in. They're supposed to get the algorithm, or at least the part of it. I don't know what part, but they're going to supposed to go in there and take out the pinging to China. That's the only thing they're going to modify. But supposedly TikTok, you know, it gets you going on some videos of some sort, and then every time you keep scrolling through, it sends a note to China, supposedly. Hey, this guy's onto this thing. Is a typical American. Let's put it down as a, we'll note that and spy on him or something. That's what they say. But they want to remove the ping.
As popular as TikTok is, there's a lot of reasons why. It has to do with also the content style that's on there, right? And the ability to do certain things with that actual platform. But
yeah, there's a number of things TikTok does right that nobody seems to get a clue about. One of them is that it's not all of them. I think you can disable it, but most of the TikTok videos you can download as MP4s, and then you can post them someplace else, and it has the TikTok logo on it. So it has a network effect where you have a promotion. So I can download, this woman's nuts. Let me download her video. And then I post it on Twitter, and it plays the video on Twitter, and there's a TikTok logo at the end plugging TikTok. And nobody's figured this out.
I know. It seems like this is the easiest thing in the world. Everybody's so afraid.
It's unbelievable how easy it is, and it's largely responsible for its success, and everybody's so dumb about it. It's incredible.
I agree. It's just coming from weakness rather than strength. But if they do retrain, a couple things. And I don't think we know the answer to this. I don't think they know the answers to this. Like, what's happening with updates and things of that nature? Is that China? Is that going to be us? Is it going to be, again, supposedly Oracle's going
to
be...
It's going to have to be us.
So if it's going to be us, and who is us? Is us?
I guess the Oracle programming team. Who else would it be?
Oh, good point you make there. Because Oracle has a really wonderful bank of social media platforms that they've put out in the past.
Yeah. No, it's going to fall apart is what you're implying. Because they always do. I mean, why don't you just give the product to Microsoft and let them kill it?
You actually give it to Facebook is what you should do. Just shut it down, which they've been very good at also. But I don't know. Is it going to be the same TikTok? I don't know. What does the retraining mean? I don't know. There's so many questions with this whole thing. Seems it's going to be interesting. And I wonder if the deal's actually even going to go through. And who's really checking on this anyway?
I'll tell you this much. The audience for these things... and TikTok would be the best example, is fickle.
Uh-huh.
And if somebody comes, a Chinese company, let's say, comes along with the ex-TikTok people or another ByteDance product called something else, is a jazzy name, and has an alternative. And so you can move all your videos from TikTok to us, and all you have to do is push this button. That would happen. It would happen so fast you wouldn't know what was going on. This is like the collapse of MySpace. Oh. It took almost no time for everyone to bail from MySpace and go to Facebook. It was just like overnight, you know, Fox buys them. They don't know what the hell they're doing. The thing, you know, starts to slowly deteriorate. Facebook comes along with not really a much better product at the time when they first showed up. Next thing you know, boom, MySpace. I think they're still available, but who uses it? Nobody.
Who was it Tom? Tom from MySpace? Wasn't that the owner that said hello to you?
I don't know anything. No, I never had a, I don't know. I have no idea.
It's Tom, a guy named Tom. But the other thing is that when you think about some of the ways they're going to do this, there's some talk about the requirement to download a new program because the old program is going to probably have all sorts of like bugaboos in it, right? You know, like, oh my God. So you're going to have to download a new program. So those people that download the new program, are you going to have to start from scratch?
Oh, there you can do a, download as an upgrade. It's just, it wouldn't be that hard.
Well, let's see what happens. We have a meme alert, by the way. Eric Jackson, a hedge fund manager who partly contributed to the trading explosion in Open Door, and we talked about Open Door not too long ago, unveiled his new pick recently, Better Homes and Finance Holdings. His firm holds a bunch of this. Better Homes soared 46% on Monday, and I think it was up 35% today. He's touting the stock. So there you go. It's a New York-based mortgage lender that supposedly uses AI. That's what they did. AI. If you read what they do, it's something about AI.
This reminds me of the blockchain mania we had a few years ago.
That's what this is. That's exactly what this is. And you got to appreciate Eric Jackson for figuring this out. Who is he? I don't know. I've never heard of him before. Is he some dude? Some dude that got popular because he started pushing the Open Door. That stock, OPEN. That stock went crazy after it was, by the way, Open Door was an interesting company. It was owned by major players and Lennar and a few others for a while. Stock came down. It just got obliterated. This is a company that would blindly go out and purchase houses online without even looking at them. And they had the same thing that Zillow tried to do and other places where they try to buy up the neighborhood and then start popping other houses in the neighborhood priced up so the whole portfolio goes up in value.
Yeah, good trick.
Yeah, it didn't work out so well for Open Door. But, no. You know, there's still, everybody's looking at this like, oh, it's something. Well, now this is the new thing, Better Homes. And I think it's BETR, I think is the symbol. Kind of interesting. I found it. Shares of Kenvue, symbol KVUE, are trading lower, largely due to reports from the White House saying that there's a warning linking prenatal use of acetaminophen to autism risk. Supposedly there's some warning there already, by the way. This isn't like earth-shattering, but investors are really concerned. The thing is down hard. It was up a little bit today. They had a big revenue decline on their last guidance. They cut their full year guidance on August 7th. But here's the big problem is it's not about, oh, you know, nobody's going to buy this anymore. Nobody's going to use Tylenol. They're going to use something else. No. The lawsuits. What do you think about that? Any parent that has had a child that used Tylenol, you know, the mother that used Tylenol, who is grief-ridden and guilt-ridden right now about what happened, and her son is on, her daughter's on the spectrum, is now going to probably join some kind of class action lawsuit.
That's a good consideration.
There's got to be, especially if it is clearly
like John's Mansville,
yeah,
which was basically put out of business by a giant class action suit. That could happen here.
Yeah, I don't see how it's not. Same thing like the opioids with those companies. Those companies were bad actors. This is different. But if you have the White House and they're going to, for the next 3 years, you know, be on this thing, and RFK Jr. is not going to get off that train, right?
No.
And he's going to find more and more, just pick the scab till there's nothing left. On another point, Pfizer, one of the companies that was looked at very, very carefully by two fine podcasters during the COVID era. That's John T. Dvorak and Adam Curry. Show is called No Agenda, which is live Thursdays, Sundays, 2 p.m. Eastern time. Of course, can be found on all sorts of other places, No Agenda Stream, and where else?
Yeah, and it is a podcast, so you can always download it.
Yep. Well, Pfizer announced it will acquire clinical stage biotech Metsera in a cash and contingent value deal. So they're going to pay them and say they're going to give them money now and say, you know what, we're going to give you more money if you reach a milestone in the future. And the deal includes a $47.50 per share in cash today, which was a 43% premium to their closing price last Friday, plus up to $22.50 in milestone payments tied to the development and commercial success of their lead candidate, which is a obesity drug. Now, Pfizer actually closed higher on the news. So that's interesting.
It was down today. Was I wrong?
I was down slightly. I mean, the whole market was down today. But I think that was a good thing that they're branching out. We'll see. I mean, Pfizer shares are looking ugly too.
Yeah, well, it's on the game. I picked it.
Yep. You picked it or I picked it?
I don't know. I think one of us picked it.
I'm sure.
I think I picked it. And I'm pretty sure I picked it because I have two. And it was because of, I think, well, I don't know. We'll find out later.
It's my name. I see it.
It's got your name on it?
Mm-hmm. Because I said hated. It's a hated stock.
Oh.
All right, moving on. Mortgage rates, 10 and 30-year treasury yields rose last week, despite the Federal Reserve cutting its short-term interest rates. 10-year yield, little change since early 2024, even though the Fed cut rates multiple times since then. As a matter of fact, I have someone coming on the Disciplined Investor, not this week, but next week. His name is Barry Eichengreen. He is a professor at UC Berkeley. In economics, very well known, very well respected, and he has a whole thing about the dollar, what's going on with the dollar, the eventual problems with it, and bonds. Wrote a recent paper that I read actually this evening on the betting sites and why people are looking at certain things with regard to. He used the betting sites as the basis for some of his research and about the feelings of where we are today and why interest rates are moving higher. And there's a whole bunch of things going on. But basically, we'll talk about this, the dollar and all that. He's a really interesting cat. I haven't talked to him
since 2012. That sounds like a good show.
Yeah, I haven't talked to him since 2012 for whatever reason. I don't know why, but it's gotten back on. But 10-year treasury jumped to 4.145%. It was down to 4% earlier this week. So maybe sell the news. Maybe. But rates are going up. Listen, in Japan, this is big news. In Japan, the Bank of Japan is keeping short-term rates steady at 0.5%. Remember, they were negative forever. Years. Years and years. They invented the negative rates. Two board members proposed unsuccessfully to hike it to 0.75%.
Yeah.
But here's the big news. One of the things that the Bank of Japan has been doing for years is buying in the open market ETFs and REITs. They've decided to start selling ETFs and REITs. One of the things, if you are a Japanese investor, for the most part, a number of years, you didn't have a lot of concern because you think, well, things don't go well. The Bank of Japan is just going to start buying up the broad-based index ETFs in the market, on the open market, and also REITs. Now they're reversing that. Now you have to wonder, is that going to cause a disruption? Remember, because there was all sorts of weird things with the currency spreads we had, and all this weird stuff going on with Japan and the yen and you know, the propping things up with pulling down the yen. This could be an issue. This is an interesting proposition and experiment they're doing is starting to reverse out of their monetary policy that they've been in for 20 years. You know, the monetary policy has been very, very dovish.
Yeah, say the least.
13 years, 37 trillion yen worth of ETFs on his balance sheet. 13 years.
Well, they can bleed it back out. Yep. See what happens.
Let's see what else we got here. The WHO, the World Health Organization, It's going to be recommending using weight loss drugs to treat obesity in adults. Their expert committee, quote unquote, concluded that the popular GLP-1 drugs, first developed by Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly, are part of the solution for long-term treatment of obesity. I want to share something that I saw tonight that I thought was really interesting. There was a study done that showed that, and I quote this commentary of the results of this study, digging deeper, our work indicates that about 70% of GLP-1 users are visiting restaurants less or much less since starting the medication, and users were most commonly reducing consumption of carbonated beverages, pizza, burgers, and alcohol. Now, I can tell you, because I know a lot of people in the industry, there's something to be said about this, that there is a clear pattern of lower alcohol sales and people sharing meals across the whole industry.
Now, you're talking about the investment business.
The restaurant industry.
You have people that are in the business.
Yeah, in the restaurant business. Sorry.
And they notice that there's a drop-off.
Drop-off in alcohol sales, drop-off in food sales, a lot of people sharing.
We're going to split that salad?
Yeah. Yeah. What do you got here? Well, we got chicken wings. 6 chicken wings for $6 a special. We'll split that. Thank you. I got a place.
Well, I don't know if they, I mean, it's obviously not good for the restaurant business, nor I don't know if there's alcohol business, the wine and food in general. Well, it's an investment opportunity to short some of these operations.
Well, many of those operations are not doing well as it is. You look at many of these names, the chain restaurants. Look at Chipotle getting smoked. You know, you see all those.
Well, that's about time.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was a long time coming. But all of these names, I mean, McDonald's probably still, I would think that McDonald's probably still doing well. Let's take a look at MCD.
I don't know what, of all the places that should be doing well, McDonald's is the bottom of my list. And not because I hate the company at all, but I have been testing their food for a number of years and I stopped because the food has become, about a year and a half ago to 2 years ago, that became, I think, inedible.
Stocks up 3.65% year to date, far below market, but still holding up pretty well. 1 year it's up 1.3%, 5 years up 38%. So it's doing its thing. It's just a, you know, cash cow.
I guess so.
Nobody, it's one of those things that this people just, $5 meals, for goodness sakes. I don't know if the GLP-1 users were frequently there anyway. I don't know. Now, you would think that would be one of the first places they would stop going to.
Yeah, you'd think.
You'd think. The FDA issues Novo Nordisk a warning letter. This is kind of interesting. Tell me if we talked about this. This was a leftover. Remember that Oprah special a couple of years back or so that they were all about, like, oh, you know, I did all these diets and dieting and for years, and I was on the Weight Watchers thing and I bought into Weight Watchers and forget all that. Forget dieting. Now it's all about these drugs, you know, Wegovy, Ozempic, Victoza. So the video originally appeared, it was March 18th, 2024. It also be accessed through ABC's website. So the video subsequently appeared on Hulu on March 19th of 2024. Now, FDA has determined that the video is false or misleading. The video misbrands Wegovy, Ozempic, and Victoza within the meaning of the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act and makes it a distribution violation.
No, we have not discussed this.
Yeah. So Oprah was all over that. She had all these experts. It was the weirdest thing. It was a one-hour special. But all it was, when I watched it, because I did watch, I'm like, oh, God, what's she talking about? It was total infomercial. And it was
they probably paid for the time.
Exactly. And I guess it wasn't clearly, I don't know. It was, the whole thing was misleading.
Well, gee, huh. Misleading stuff on television, misleading?
Right. All right, what else we got here? Oh, there's a lot of stuff on this list. H-1B golden passports. The White House announced that the new fee of $100,000 per on an annual basis for H-1B visas. And of course, they had to walk it back because they just say things and then they walk it back. You know, they don't have anything. Let's see how this goes. So they came
out
with
the entire administration is one. It's a group of test marketers.
That's all they are. They're like A-Bers, right?
Yeah, they test market everything. Yeah, nobody liked that idea. We're not going to do it.
So there was this $100,000 annual fee for H-1B visa applications, which is mainly used, not mainly, but it's used in the technology industry, primarily with these major companies coming from India, China, et cetera, where they get these applications in, and it's a big concern. As a matter of fact, the Indian stock market took a bit of a move down on this news, which is kind of interesting.
Why?
Well, because there's concern that all of a sudden that Indians who are here making all this money, sending money back home, are going to have to pay $100,000 a year somehow, and they're not going to have jobs. You have to go back to India. This was later discussed that, well, it's not for the people that are here already. I don't know how that works. So what's the point? If they're not here already, and there's a $100,000 annual fee, so initial and annual fee, who's going to come? What's the point of this? Is it to dissuade any other people coming? And why just not the new people? What happened to the people that are here already? I don't understand. Some of this stuff doesn't make sense. There must be a reason.
Well, it's elusive.
Yep. There we go. Paul Atkins, chairman of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, said his agency will propose a rule change following the Trump administration's call to switch quarterly earnings reports to semi-annual. He said if the rule change is approved, it will let companies decide whether they switch to semi-annual or stay with quarterly. The rule can be changed by a majority vote. This issue has been come under debate for a long time. And supporters say that the six-month reporting schedule, well, that's going to free up companies to focus on their business. Because I guess
what do you think of this?
I have multiple thoughts on this. I think it is a little bit onerous to do these quarterly reports on one hand. On the other hand, it's kind of good as an investor to find out what's going on with the company. Otherwise, I'm not going to know for 6 months, and that's a long period of time. On the other hand, do I really care to know about every granular point of what's going on? Every quarter, let's say. On the other hand, it gives us a lot of information about what's going on in the economy and how to plan properly from a financial perspective. So there's a lot of sides to this whole discussion. I'm kind of almost, I'm on the side of I like quarterlies because I like the transparency and I like the information. So I got to tell you that I think is something very important. On a semi-annual base, getting information, I think it's going to lead back to less transparency, and especially for individuals who have really inability to get any information. It's going to put a lot of analysts out of work, which is fine with me. That's great anyway. So retail investors are just not going to have the ability, though, to get information. So I'm not sure how that disrupts the market. Many companies will probably continue with the quarterly anyway. They have it already, so why as well just do it.
Yeah, you already have it set up.
Yep. We got a sucker's alert. Elon Musk's XAI is raising $10 billion from investors in a round that values the company now at $200 billion, sources tell CNBC's David Faber. And this fundraiser comes weeks after Musk raised $10 billion in debt and equity at what is believed to be around a $150 billion valuation. Now, later on Friday, Musk called the report fake news, because that's what he does, right? He's got this, he goes back to that. Said that XAI is not raising any capital right now. Now, if you look back on this, back in March, Musk, he announced that XAI had merged with X, the social network, yeah. Twitter. All stock deal, right? Just, we'll take it over. Valuing the total company at $80 billion. That was in March. Social media company was at $33 billion. That's round number, let's call it $125 million, okay? Just as a number. Then it went for $150 just a few months later. I don't know. It seems to me that this is gonna be a thing. This is definitely going to be a thing. That's why Tesla shares are like $245. Makes no sense. Their sales suck. But I think what's going to happen is there's this thought that we're going to see a roll in and a roll up of XAI, Twitter, and SpaceX.
SpaceX,
mm-hmm.
Twitter.
Yep. XAI and Tesla.
All the companies combined?
Yeah, because I think that will help him towards his goal to get his $1 trillion payday.
Oh, that's right. That's what his goal is, yeah.
So let's just do every bit of financial engineering that's possible.
Yeah, yeah, and he's got some, I think it looks as if he's got some people that really know how to do this.
Oh, he's good at it. He's very good at it. Got a couple more stories, but let's let them bake till next week because it's time we got to talk about some stocks, don't you think?
Yeah.
This is a game that we play. It's not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any kind. Nothing on the show should be considered investment advice or a recommendation. If you choose to invest in any of the stocks mentioned, you should know that it may carry risk, along with the risk of a loss of principal. You should also seek out professional financial advice for your particular situation. We assume no risk as these are not to be considered recommendations. Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may invest in any of the securities mentioned and will disclose that on the website under the weekly stock picks section. You can go to dhunplugged.com and see all the names we discuss in the segment along with the performance information from the date discussed as well as any additional important disclosures.
Do you remember that guy that really would speak fast in like the 70s on TV?
Yeah, he did all kinds of ads.
Somehow it reminded me of that.
You can speed it up.
He did all sorts of crazy ads, didn't he?
Yeah, he was good at it.
All right, so why don't you take this list and look through it. Some nice numbers on here. A couple of stopouts, or at least one stopout, I guess.
Generac, if it's leveled off, and that was the end of that.
I feel like Iridex got stopped out, too. I have to update that. I feel like it got stopped out.
Mm. Well, the top of the list is all green and nicely green. It's all in the good numbers, except a couple of shorts are still green, but they're not like the rest of it. Yeah, shorts hard, impossible at the moment to do anything. And then we have a mixed bag of stuff over the last few weeks, including, except for Lyft. Lyft is one of your picks is a buy, and it's a winner. And the other stuff is just Iridex is, yeah, then look. Well, that was a 20%, or that might.
Maybe it's AP Moller. I got to look. No, AP Moller is still open. I thought I saw it stop, but I'll have to look again. Pfizer's down.
Then you got Tesla short is not making out, and neither is Oracle short, which is my idea. And it's a short, but it's going to be a while.
Yep.
That's about it. We don't, except the big winner on there, of course, is still Halozyme Therapeutics at a 54% gain.
That was one of those reversey dipsy doodles, as you call it, where there was some discussion and concern about Medicare cuts, and this stock was just going to get obliterated. It did get obliterated, and everybody's like, okay, well, I guess not. It's one of those things that came out, and it's like nobody heard about it again.
Yeah.
Do you have any names for this week?
Yeah, I do. Go ahead. I have two kind of new issues. I got them from television.
Oh.
But I like the theories that this woman expressed about these two stocks. One of them is FIGR.
FIGR. FIGR.
And this is a
Figure Technology Solutions.
Yeah, this is a stablecoin play, which I think I should have at least something in this regard. Stablecoin being some sort of a screwball notion is hard to understand, but Curry on the No Agenda show keeps lecturing the audience about it. It's a
he's a fan.
It's not a crypto. It is a kind of a way of beating the SWIFT system.
Yeah, it's basically stablecoin. It's basically think of it as a dollar, just a stable coin. Matter of fact, we talked about that this week with, I know that we're doing a lot of promotion here, but I have a Pat Camuso, who's an expert in crypto taxation, and we talked all about stablecoin this week. And Barry Eichengreen also has a big issue about stablecoin, how it's going to wreck us.
Yeah, I think that's a possibility, but it's not going to do it tomorrow.
No.
So this might be a good play.
Okay.
And then the other one is NTSK. And this stock is a, and I like the argument on this too. This is a new network security operation that has that is under. If you line up all the network security operations side by side, this is the best deal.
Netskope.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been moving pretty hard the last few days.
Yeah. So that, I mean, I'm gonna.
That's an IPO. That was an IPO, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. It just came out. Oh, yeah, so it could collapse. It could go up. I think it's going to go up.
Hopefully the system will be able to handle an IPO. We'll see. All right. Well, with that, we close this evening, and we're going to watch for the sell Rosh Hashanah and buy Yom Kippur. We'll see what happens there. And I'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Gotcha.
All right. Bye.
This is a game.
Not that one.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.
This podcast is intended for informational purposes only and does not constitute personalized investment advice. Investing involves risk, including the possible loss of principal, and past performance is not indicative of future results. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts and the guests and may not necessarily reflect those of Horowitz & Company, Inc., an investment advisor registered with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training. Advisory services are only offered to clients or prospective clients where Horowitz & Company is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Any mention of third-party companies, products, or services is provided for informational purposes only and does not constitute an endorsement. Hypothetical scenarios or forward-looking statements are for illustrative purposes only and should be viewed only as that and not as guarantees. Content is intended for U.S. residents only and may not be applicable in other jurisdictions. Listeners should consult a qualified financial advisor before making any investment decision. Please visit our website for additional information, disclosures, as well as a copy of our Form CRS.
Podcasts around the clock. This is the No Agenda Stream.
So rough, but it's still better than it. easy. Soon it'll be our turn, don't you believe me? Just keep rolling on. In time you'll find where you belong. So when you gonna learn to take it easy? Soon it'll be our turn, don't you believe me?
Listening to the No Agenda Stream, where freedom lives and censorship comes to get its ass kicked.
She can keep in line, everything's fine. You got all that you need, the Curry and the Keeper.
Curry and the Keeper for September 16, 2025, episode 143. Curry and the Keeper.
Hello, my queen.
Hello, my love.
Good to be back in the routine with you on the scene. I figured I'd do two rhymes today.
Okay, very nice, very nice. Yes, it is good to be back, but that doesn't mean we're going to be back every week. Maybe every other week.
And there it is, everybody. That was the show.
Yeah. We all haven't decided yet. I mean, well, we have to talk about why we took a little hiatus.
It's been so long.
I know.
I don't remember why we took a hiatus. It's why been, did we take a hiatus?
It's been about six weeks.
It was July 27th.
We started going to the Rebuilding Liberty class
on Wednesday.
At church. This was Wednesday. Over the summer, and then it was running late. And
yes, right. It would be 8 o'clock.
It would make the show be we would record much later than usual. And you turned to me and you said, how about if we just don't do a show tonight? How about if we take a little bit of a break? And I was like, thank you.
You were like,
thank you. I just wanted, because really I felt like, and I know people have sent us so many emails and I appreciate every single one of them, but I felt like really nobody was listening.
Yeah, this,
and I don't want to be stuck on, I don't want to be ruled by algos. I don't want to be ruled
algos.
by key metrics, like how many people are opening up the email. And then when I see like hardly anybody opened it up, then I'm thinking, why are we even doing this?
Well, it turns out a lot of people were listening because they certainly were very CK sad when they didn't get a show.
Yes.
But we definitely got notes about that.
Yes, yes. And I did. Like Winnie, and who lives overseas.
I think there's probably 18, Sarah, 18 people.
about 10 people.
But those 18 people are very important
to
us.
But it's so interesting. Like, I know that my, your sister? Willow. But none of my sisters, like, they don't even listen. They don't listen.
Well,
they don't
have to know that for almost 18 years, I've been doing a podcast that no one in my family actually listens to with any regularity, certainly not in its entirety. That is just.
Yeah, but you have 900,000 people that do. We have 25.
Yeah, but that's the plight of the podcaster.
I guess.
Your family never listens to your stuff.
I just needed a break, and I appreciate you allowing me to just.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
And I never did get the Substack out. I was going to get a Substack out today. I did.
I was afraid to.
I was gone all day today.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're busy. We're both incredibly busy. A lot has been going on.
Yes.
The whole Godcaster project just consumes every other moment that I'm not prepping for No Agenda, etc.
Yes. Yeah.
And then I got a message, and it was around the same time, like, okay, time to do the podcast with Pastor Jimmy.
Yes.
And I'm like, okay, well.
Yeah.
5 podcasts a week. It's okay. I can do that. Yes.
You want to talk a little? But before
Not at all.
I have it on my list to talk about. But first off, we were supposed to record last Wednesday. And when we heard about Charlie Kirk's public execution, and that's what I'm calling it.
Yeah.
We were wrecked by that news. We were profoundly affected by it. And so there was no way I was going to record and try to be joyful or talk about silly things. And so that's why we didn't record. And that's why a few people did reach out and ask, well, I can't find the show. And I said, that's why.
Yeah.
So, yes, that affected us profoundly.
It still has its effects on us, for sure.
It really has. And it's just interesting. It's interesting how they, in quotes, are trying to form the narrative. Let's just put it that way.
It's
ridiculous. But anyway, we pray for his wife and his two little children. And of course, the entire family. Although we never met him, we did see him in
where was I? I keep forgetting.
We were in Frisco, Texas.
Frisco, right.
And he was talking about how the churches need to get on board with the culture and Christianity, which is why Pastor Jimmy is so dedicated to that. And Pastor Jimmy did an amazing sermon on Sunday. If you get a chance, please go listen to it. Amazing. Honored Charlie Kirk. Yeah. Very much so. And every pastor should have talked about that from the pulpit. Every pastor. And a lot did not.
No,
so
I know.
Anyway,
you're being scolded by the keeper, pastors.
So, and then also before we go any further, I want to wish a very, very happy birthday to my friend Peggy Lydon. She is.
Did you catch it this year?
Catch what?
Her birthday.
I sent her a card. Oh. Yes, and her birthday's on the 18th.
Whenever Tina misses someone's birthday, she beats herself up for days.
I feel badly. I sent her a card, so it's her big 6-0.
Oh, really? 6-0. Oh, happy birthday, Peg. I didn't realize
and
it
then,
was a big one
happy
for
birthday
her.
To my sister, Toni, who's she doesn't listen to the show on Saturday. and then also my mom, whose birthday is on Sunday.
So it's all the September people. Yeah, it's all the Virgos, man. We're the best.
Speaking of September birthdays, you had a birthday. How was your birthday?
My birthday was, it was great. I woke up on September 3rd and didn't think of that. I didn't even remember it was my birthday. I think it was early. I woke up early. I'm like, why do I have 27 text messages? What happened? I'm like, oh, that's right. It's my birthday.
Yes.
And the highlight was, well, we didn't really do much. We went out with Pastor Jimmy and Annette. The highlight was, I have to say, your gift to me was phenomenal.
I am a good gift giver.
You're a great gift giver.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have that.
The undertone here is you suck, Curry. You're not that great.
I have to put it out there. You kind of lost your touch with gift giving.
I'm speechless.
Because I give you ideas and links and sizes and colors.
But that's what you've done from day one.
No, the very first gift I got from you was for Christmas was the most beautiful sterling silver Tiffany bracelet. That was like chef's kiss. That was nice.
And it was all downhill from there.
Kind of, yeah.
All I know is once again, I'm no good.
Back to you, Bob.
You've lost your touch. You suck. Meanwhile, Tina's like, I don't want any gifts. I don't want any gifts. I just want a love letter. Did I give you a love letter?
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Yes.
So how could I have lost my touch?
Anyway, back to you, Bob, and your birthday.
Don't call me Bob, Shirley.
So tell them. Okay, so you had lots of love.
Shall I tell the class what I got?
You had lots of love.
And I got a beautiful shofar.
Yes.
Which I am quite adept at blowing already, yes. I should say. You heard it. I blew it just by that, too,
weren't you? Yes,
because you're an excellent gift giver.
I know.
So much better than me. My goodness. Not only are you the best gift giver, you actually told Pastor Jimmy and Annette what to give me.
I know.
Because you're such a good gift giver. Wait, you rock. You're the best. Top of the notch. Top of the bill. Woo.
I did do pretty well. You also got something else from me.
Well, hold on. So I got a beef branding iron.
A monogram.
With your
initials.
With AC. Yes. I did.
Yes.
Babe. Now I'm going to say, what else did you give me? I'm sorry. I've completely forgotten at this very moment in time.
I bought you something that was against my moral code.
Why am I drawing a complete...
I bought you another hoodie.
Oh, okay. Well, hold on a second.
Yes. Tell the story.
Why don't you just give me a script?
Tell the story.
Just give me a script or just give me cue cards.
No, go ahead. Give me
a teleprompter. Go ahead, Kara. I got a very nice hoodie from Tina, which is Savid.
It says S-A-V-D on the front.
Saved.
And it has John 3:16 on the sleeve.
Saved, yes. And which is really nice. It's a cold weather hoodie because there are differences in hoodies.
Oh, you got summer hoodies and fall hoodies
totally.
And winter hoodies.
And I have hoodies that you've shrunk. I've got all kinds of cool hoodies.
I have not shrunk any of your hoodies.
Well, they shrank.
Oh, well, maybe you should take over the laundry.
I've offered that millions of times.
Okay, it's all yours starting tomorrow.
Why do you even stay with me? Why haven't you kicked me out of the house? And of course,
if you only knew, Adam, if you only knew what I do with your hoodies, you have no idea, do you? No, you don't. I save your hoodies as much as I dislike the fact that they take up the whole laundry basket. I save them. I do. I wash them. Okay. I line dry them. Then I put them when they're dry. I put them in the dryer to fluff them up so they're not crunchy for you. So, you feel bad now?
Yeah, I think I'm going to stop wearing hoodies. I am. I'm just going to stop wearing hoodies.
But that's the truth. I do that.
I can't take it anymore.
No.
So you gave me a hoodie. Thank you. Appreciate it. And but then it was like, oh, well, you have to throw one out. And okay. And then she said, and by the way, it can't be the Matthew West sweatshirt. That doesn't count. And so I brought out the Kane hoodie, which I've never worn. Yes. You're like, that doesn't count.
You come out with the sheepish green. You're like, here's this one.
By the way, the one that I gave you, so I gave you the Kane hoodie and the other one, it showed up again in my closet.
It yes. Did?
Yeah. The things my drills instructor told me. Yeah. Yeah, blood dry, the blood clots, sweat dries, suck it up, buttercup. That's the one I gave you. And it showed up washed and cleaned and folded in the closet again.
Oh, I don't know how that happened.
But you know what?
You must have put it in the laundry.
No.
Yes, you did.
No, but I'll tell you what. I think I'm going to stop with the hoodies. I really do.
Okay.
I think I'm going to stop. And let's see how you like my shirts. Because I guarantee you, it's not about the hoodies. It's just about a man putting things into the basket. It has nothing to do with the hoodie. It's just a man, a humanoid male specimen in your basket. That's what it is. I think I'm going to have to stop. Okay. I can't take it anymore.
Okay.
I just can't. Now that I hear how much.
Now you're going into winter.
Now that I hear what a burden it is.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
It's not a burden. You said you're shrinking my hoodies. And I'm like, do you know what I do so that doesn't happen?
How?